Thanks for tuning in to the Glossy Beauty Podcast. I'm your host, Priya Rao, and here with me today is Julian Race, the CEO and founder of Super Ordinary. Welcome, Julian. It's so nice to see you today.
Thanks, Priya. It's so lovely to see you, and thanks for having me on your show.
Julian, you know, I think it's funny because, you know, you and I have talked so much in the last 2 years, and in reality, you know, you're one of the few, but also many serial beauty entrepreneurs who are men. And I think before Super Ordinary, you know, most people knew you from Skin Laundry. And so I'm wondering how you kind of first got into this industry.
Yeah, it's been quite a journey, I have to say. You know, the path that my career has taken is definitely non-traditional, I would say, at the very least. You know, I really started my career in finance, which kind of like opened my eyes up to the global, you know, opportunities and understanding like what are the, you know, things that we should be thinking about when, you know, from a career point of view, like especially in finance where there's so many markets that intersect, and there's so many different opportunities. Skin Laundry came about really from my time in Asia. You know, during my, when I was in Singapore, I had started a hedge fund, which was looking at like the big macro opportunities specifically in the Asian markets. And one of the things that I noticed was that, you know, beauty brands that were being distributed in Southeast Asia, were just, you know, in its infancy. We had, you know, stores like Watson's and Sephora, but e-commerce 1.0 was just beginning. So my actual first foray into beauty came by being an investor in one of the first distribution companies in Singapore called Luxola. And that really opened my eyes into the beauty market, seeing how big the market could potentially be. So Skin Laundry was actually, you know, my second venture in the beauty industry. Luxola being my first, which was eventually acquired by LVMH. And, the laser facial business was a very interesting one to me because I think that, you know, cream-based facials, which were the traditional way that people got facials, was, you know, really the first version. And you know, lasers have incredible efficacy, and the ability to be able to disrupt that market was really a big opportunity. So that's really how I got into Skin Laundry. And, you know, very proud to say that the business is, you know, we started in 2013 and now it's in the Middle East, London, Hong Kong, America, and, you know, and it's doing extremely well.
I think it's interesting. You know, I didn't know that fact about that you worked in distribution and with distributors in Asia before, because it seems a little bit like you're coming full circle right now with Super Ordinary.
That's
so
right.
Tell me a little bit about how you kind of got this idea, because I feel like, you know, there was this chasm between indie brands in the US and what they were doing and their growth opportunities abroad. And you really seem to kind of solve that for a lot of these buzzy brands.
I think the timing was quite fortuitous, because when I was in Hong Kong in 2016, there was, you know, the China market, which was obviously becoming much more prevalent for, you know, Chinese tourists coming into Hong Kong. I noticed that a lot of the, you know, the luxury store counters at many of the big, you know, shops like Lane Crawford were being dominated by Chinese tourists coming in, buying lots of product and bringing it back into China. And I was kind of just asked myself the question, like, why is that happening? And why would they travel all the way to Hong Kong to buy these products? And, everyone knows the size of the markets in China are enormous, but really what I was thinking about was how do we solve this problem in a much more efficient manner? But then also how do you build a brand domestically in China? But a lot of this stemmed from the fact that animal testing prevented a lot of these new indie brands from entering the market. So I moved to Shanghai and really just tried to understand, you know, how products were entering the market. And I found that there was this incredible opportunity to really build brands in China. There were a lot of marketing agencies in China. There were a lot of what you'd call trade partners that would operate brands on local e-commerce stores. But no one was really bringing all this together under one roof to provide a full service. And I wouldn't even call it a distribution partner. I call ourselves really as general managers or brand managers in the local market, because what we do is really are your, you know, the extension of the brand's arms, eyes, ears in the China market, managing your brand. which requires you to, you know, be one with that brand.
Tell me a little bit about what was the reception to that? Because I know one of the first brands that you brought over to China was Drunk Elephant, which, you know, people were so rapid fire for here in the US, and pharmacy, because, you know, I think that there was a problem before. I would say that, like, when you looked at the top 10 brands on Tmall, it was all conglomerate owned. So this really gave these smaller brands who did have buzz an opportunity to kind of maybe level the playing field a little bit.
Yeah, and I think this dynamic is a very interesting one. To your point, you know, the top brands, you know, Lancome, Kiehl's, all the very big L'Oreal and Estee Lauder brands, which dominated the top 10 and continue to dominate the top 10 brands amongst a lot of the Chinese competitors, still prevails. I think, you know, the challenge, as most people know, building a brand in any market is an expensive venture. It takes, you know, in my view, 5 years to build a brand properly, at least. So for anyone to build a brand quickly in a foreign market where there's no information transfer, it's a big challenge, and I wouldn't wish that on anyone. But what I thought was the opportunity was that, you know, the market, the consumers in the market were very willing to try and test other brands. And to me, that's like the secret, that if the market's willing to try and test other brands and are excited about what else is out there, then, you know, we could be that faucet to bring these brands, that channel to bring these brands into this very large market. I think it's going to be continually very expensive to build these brands in these markets because the marketplace is so big and it's so competitive. But what I thought was interesting when we brought brands like pharmacy is that we're really showing the world, the market in China, that there is a lot to be seen from the US brands into the China market, specifically around themes like clean beauty, which at the time were very nascent.
Would you say that once you were able to maybe bring Drunk Elephant or pharmacy to China and show that kind of success, that you were able to kind of create a little bit of a tumbleweed effect, because it now seems like you are the go-to for all of these indie brands who are trying to make it in China? And this was even before COVID.
Yeah. You know, I think, you know, going back to our days and as a trader, you know, your track record really, you know, creates that halo effect and brings you other opportunities. And I think what we've been trying to do at Super Ordinary is really become very focused on the brands that we bring in. We do a lot of due diligence around the brand before we sign on a brand to bring into China. In the beginning, it was really hard to convince a brand to come with us. You know, I'd have to beg, borrow, and steal to even get a meeting. And it was really challenging. But I think what we did is really focus on each and every brand that we work with to make sure that we really understand the DNA of the brand and to see whether it would translate in the local market. Many a time you would bring a brand into the market, we would have to localize the brand, give it its own hashtag, its own emoji. Really, each of its SKUs have to be named and given in a manner that feels like a local brand. And some brands just may not work in China. So, you know, we have to be very cognizant of that. So when we do the analysis on the brands, because, you know, as everyone knows, the consumer there has a very different, you know, reception to some of the different products. Some products may be too heaty or too thick or too viscous. So we need to do our homework around it. So typically when we bring on a brand, it takes around 2 to 3 weeks for us to do the basic due diligence around the product itself before we even go to the next stage of you know, information transfer.
So tell me, what would you think the main white space, I know there's just many, or difference is between selling in China and the customer appetite for beauty in China versus the US?
So I think the consumer in China is changing faster than any other consumer globally. I think they're the ones, the younger generation, you know, 88% of the beauty buyers there are Generation Y and Z. So that is really, you know, showing how much it skews to the younger generation. They're the ones that are making the bigger decisions. And, you know, the consumers there are telling us that they are looking to spend more money on skincare and color in the next 12 to 24 months. They're looking to purchase much more. So if you look at that versus some of the US markets, I would say that the growth factor is that much bigger in China. And so if that's the one piece of information that I know that other people don't, is that the market's going to grow that much quicker. And that is why, you know, we think it's very important to really have your finger on the pulse in the data that we receive on a daily basis from all the consumers that we sell to. And I think that that helps us, you know, translate that information into, you know, telling our brands and our partners, like, what's, you know, what's the next trend that's coming around the corner. So, you know, I think the pace of change, the pace of growth is the biggest aspect difference. So, what that means to me when I think about the beauty industry is that it's going to be a lot of excitement coming around the corner, because we never know what's going to happen. You know, I remember when, you know, clay masks were a thing and they aren't anymore. But, you know, if you look in China, things can turn around so quickly. So for us to be able to respond to that quickly is what I think is going to be like the next 10 years. Whereas I feel like the US market, you know, it's a very exciting market because it's very deep, it's very developed. But at the same time, I feel that the growth in the beauty market is slowing down versus China.
So in many ways, you would probably argue that it is a first mover's advantage in getting to China quickly, right?
Well, I think we've had a few different, milestones that have happened recently in China. And obviously animal testing regulation change is one of them. And I think everyone's scratching their heads to say, you know, how do we enter the China markets successfully? A lot of people will come to the precipice of making that decision. And then, and obviously there are many partners that you can go with. And my advice is, you know, really to be very thoughtful about it, because it's a very expensive venture to go on. The issue is that if you go into China and you're not successful, it's very difficult to rebuild that lack of success quickly again. I think, you know, the China market now is really exciting because, you know, it is opening up and, you know, there are going to be more and more channels to sell your product through. I think, you know, some of the other changes that we've recently seen is that where the consumers are buying their products in China. So previously they were buying their products overseas and then bringing it back in different formats. But now there's the introduction of all these duty-free channels that are occurring, like in Hainan Island, which makes it very exciting for these travelers who are doing a lot more domestic travel these days to find your products. The introduction of new retail. I think new retail, when I was in China, you know, a couple of years ago, was really exciting, especially what we were seeing in the grocery and the supermarket with what Alibaba was doing. And we're starting to see that more and more in the beauty channels as well. So I think, you know, the activity within the beauty space in China is getting a lot faster and a lot bigger. And, you know, I think what's also exciting is that a lot of these trends are coming through in Southeast Asia as well now.
Tell me a little bit about the COVID impact, Julian, because obviously, you know, you started this business in a big way right before, you know, COVID really hit globally. And so what has been, you know, the lessons learned? Because in some parts of the world, you know, COVID is still very much normalized. And, you know, when you think about Brazil or India, but what's happening in Asia with these brands?
I think what's happened was we had COVID was such an interesting topic, you know, when you and I first started talking, and, you know, COVID came and went in China very quickly. And what we noticed was that, you know, the business started to, you know, just take off in many ways, because, I think, you know, especially skincare, obviously color had a negative impact. But what we found was that, you know, the willingness for the consumer to try more and more products in the cross-border channels was just getting much, much, much larger. So I think COVID, was definitely a less of an impact negatively in China than it was globally. But, you know, I think what everyone really, you know, why it was less of an impact was that we didn't have the retail stores to contend with, which is what many of the brands in the US and Europe are heavily, you know, dependent on the retail channel. But, you know, obviously the D2C business obviously did fairly well out of the back of that. But I think in China, you know, all it did was made our e-commerce revenue a lot larger.
So tell me a little bit, Julian, about how you kind of parlayed that now here to the US with Amazon. Because, you know, I think there are a lot of misconceptions about what Amazon and beauty can offer to brands. But at the same time, you know, we're in this place of the last year of not going to stores and really relying on shipments from Amazon. And there was a little bit also of a democratization. So, you know, where did you think that you could bring that channel expertise from China to the US?
Yeah, you know, I get asked that question a lot. And it's, you know, and it's really interesting because I think going back to where I feel the beauty world is going is, I think it's really interesting. You know, the way I think about beauty in the future is that in the next 5 to 10 years, we're all going to be, you know, highly dependent, highly demanding consumers, expecting everything to be done the very minute we put that order through our mobile device. And we expect that product to be sitting on our doorstep in 30 minutes. And the only person that can really truly do that are the large platforms. And these large platforms are Amazon, Tmall, Lazada, Tokopedia. So, you know, the way that I see Super Ordinary growing is that we truly want to become the one-stop shop partner for beauty brands to go global. And to really be operating in the best manner across multiple platforms, not just Amazon, not just Tmall, but really being that partner to really take these brands. Because we feel that our brand partners are amazing and they're fantastic at, you know, the creativity. They're great at designing products. But when it comes down to like really bring these products to local markets and around the world, it takes a lot of manpower and it's a lot of expense. So we truly want to be that partner to take these brands everywhere. So Amazon is really just one of our first pilot, you know, forays into building out that expertise.
And, you know, with Amazon, I think what's interesting is for sure in China, you know, I think Super Ordinary is seemingly what their seeming proposition was, is that you were bringing these buzzy indie brands to China. Here in the US, it almost seems like you are kind of reminding people that luxury can sell on Amazon. So will you talk a little bit about that? Like how you thought about that you could almost do a better job than say indie beauty or luxury beauty on Amazon?
So our view is that the consumer is going to be on these channels, whether you like them or not. And that we should always be thinking about, put yourself in the consumer's shoes and then go work backwards. And not to say that, you know, we always believe that the consumer is going to be buying in Sephora and Ulta and on your D2C site. But more and more often, our consumers are spending more and more time on Amazon, whether they're watching movies or whether they're, you know, purchasing their groceries. So the consumer knows your brand. They discover your brand on the website. But we feel that in order to really become that true partner, we really need your product needs to be on Amazon. And your products are usually already on there anyway with rogue sellers. So, you know, why not just defend that in the first instance? But over time, and this is just going to my point, is that when you're looking at platforms, we shouldn't be thinking about it in a static fashion. We should be thinking about where it's going to be in 5 years. And in 5 years or 10 years, you know, your brand has to be very well recognizable, very well, you know, the experience has to be matching to the highest levels as possible. And we feel that by being able to operate your brands and Super Ordinary to really, you know, storytell your brands in the best possible way, and have a high touch partner such as our team, you know, really focuses on, is really the best way forward. So, you know, we've only started the business 6 months ago. So it's very new to us. And already, you know, we're seeing, you know, incredible results for the brands that we partner with. And, you know, I really feel like we're building a team that really will be able to, you know, take your brands to the next level. And not only, you know, working with us on Amazon, we'll be also be able to take your brands elsewhere around the world to really, you know, share that brand knowledge we have about your product.
Tell me how important it was to maybe create a team around you that understood luxury and understood that elevated point of beauty. Because I know obviously Maureen Case, she's very well known. She was most recently at Augustinus Spader and, you know, Violet Grey, and he was at Estee Lauder forever. And she's one of your right hands on this. And I imagine it's that much more compelling to have someone like Maureen on your side to be able to say, hey, you know, you can sell on Amazon and you can do it in an elevated way. Tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah. So, I mean, I think that's exciting. I mean, first of all, I love Maureen. She's like just one of the most beautiful people inside and out. And she's been, you know, she came into my office in Shanghai a couple of years ago, and I was so bedazzled by her because I was just said, you know, she's got such class and really truly understands beauty. And as to your point, she built La Mer, Jo Malone, Bobbi Brown. I mean, her track record is insane. But I think, you know, the way I think about building businesses is you should always build from within. Don't try and build a business sitting in, you know, LA and try and build a business in India from LA. You have to always be a local wherever you go. And I always think being local, is one of the things that I learned as a kid growing up, is traveling as much as I could and really understanding the local culture. So when I think about building our Super Ordinary's business, it's really about being local. So we, you know, building our team of local experts in America around Amazon is the only way to go, or building within China. And also, you know, soon we'll be building in other parts of the world as well. But Maureen is just getting started. I think we're just in our first innings now about building an incredible team. I think you'll see some very significant hires being coming across the Super Ordinary over the next 6 to 12 months. And our vision is to really become the, you know, the experts globally in beauty. And that's not just in picking brands and building brands, but it's also in developing brands as well.
Before we move on to that, Julian, I just have to ask, you know, like you have 6 brands on Amazon right now, and you're trying to scale that up to 10. I know that Super Ordinary, I believe, hit like 90 million in revenue this last year in China, obviously alone. So what is kind of the expectation here, like with this Amazon business for growth?
Look, I think Amazon in the long term, there's no reason why that can't be a $500 million business. You know, it really can't be, because it's such a big market and it's growing so fast. And I do truly believe that that model truly does work, and you can scale it. So I think there's a humongous opportunity for us to build out core competency in Amazon.
What is your thoughts on, or what are your thoughts rather on, luxury beauty, the existing luxury beauty platform? Because I would say that they're doing a better job with fashion. You know, they seem to be onboarding more brands, but I am surprised, you know, like Clé de Peau is on there, which is an incredible brand. Revive, like what's your thoughts there? Because I mean, obviously they're trying to do this themselves in house.
Yeah. I think, you know, Amazon's doing a good job about, you know, building out and creating a place for these brands to exist. And, you know, we've seen that in other platforms around the world. You know, JD.com has done it with Toplife. And, you know, there are other platforms that are really trying to create this luxury avenue, or, you know, shopping, a shop within a shop for these brands. I think there's opportunities for both. You know, it's a wide enough berth. There's so much opportunity for 3P and 1P players to be in this market. And, you know, I think there's always going to be room for the marketplace for 3P operators. I would be very shocked for them to take that away, just because I think that's where, you know, most of the activity happens in Amazon globally. The second you take away the marketplace or 3P operators, you know, it changes the business model of Amazon in a very big way. But I think it was important for Amazon to do this, to show that, you know, brands can exist in a luxury fashion on Amazon. And I think what we do as well is, you know, we take the storefronts and we really spend a lot of time making it look as beautiful as your own website so that you feel that you have that very rich experience. So there is, you know, there's room for both, really.
Tell me a little bit about the incubation piece, because I remember when we spoke last time, Julian, you said to me that, you know, you want to be a global house of beauty. You know, you want to compete with the LVMHs of the world. And I think so much of that is also going to be about acquisition and investment. So tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah. So, you know, our strategy is really to build, first of all, is to really build expertise in distribution and localizing our brands to the local markets in which we operate. That is by far the most important piece, is really being able to, you know, connect to the consumer and truly understand who that consumer is and use the data that we have from that consumer to resell the same products or the same brands or other brands to that consumer. I think, you know, once we've developed that expertise, it's very important for us to, you know, take advantage of those channels to be able to find out what the consumer is looking for and then reverse engineer it and to find brands that, you know, respond to that consumer's desires. So we've started to dabble. I say dabble just because it's only very new to us, by investing in a handful of brands. And we're looking for brands that are really different to what, you know, is out there. But brands that we think we can, you know, create value with, but add value to them as well. And Maureen really is going to help spearhead this. And so we look for opportunities for brands that, you know, we've made investments so far and they're well known in the market. I think with Violette, an incredible makeup artist. She was ex global beauty editor for Estee Lauder. You know, David Yee from Very Good Light, which is a gender inclusive brand, which we're extremely excited about. And, you know, these brands, you know, I think are the new generation of brands, which, you know, the Gen Z of the worlds are really dictating where these products are being developed and how the, and, you know, what's important to these consumers. So we've been making minority investments and soon to be some more control investments to really accelerate them and grow them through our distribution flywheel.
Tell me about Violette and obviously Good Light, because I think that those are speaking to a new kind of customer versus, you know, the historical legacy customer. They seem to be more inclusive, more conscious consumerism at play. What was attractive to you about those kind of values and built-in ethos?
I think, you know, when I meet these founders, and I think if anyone knows me well, they would say that I'm pretty much like I'm a people person. I really enjoy meeting people and hearing their story almost to a fault. I think it's one of the things that I really enjoy about the beauty industry is that it's such an incredible space because, you know, you have such incredible entrepreneurs who are really passionate about what they're doing. In Violette's case, I met her a couple of years ago when she was just coming up with the idea. And, you know, I kind of like was, you know, met with her and just gave her advice to how I would do it if I was her. But what I thought was special about her was she was coming at the beauty industry from YouTube, and she was building up a YouTube following and then was going to go back into, you know, Instagram. But her following was really these short videos, which she was giving makeup tutorials. And at the time, whilst there were other, you know, YouTubers out there, I felt like she did it in a manner which was like very different. And I also liked the fact that, you know, she wasn't, you know, traditional in the way she came into the world. She, you know, she came as a creative. She worked with, you know, the greats like Karine Reutfeldt at Vogue. She was from France. And I also liked the fact that, you know, in France, in Europe, you know, when you think about new brands that come to market, there's not that many compared to the US. So she had something different to offer. And, you know, I think she had a very engaging personality and she loves products more than anyone I ever came across, and very, very picky. So I was very willing to take an early bet on her.
And what about David's line?
So David was also introduced to me. And I just think that anyone that spends 5 minutes with David will get sold. He is, you know, his story, his background, you know, his mission in life, I think is second to none. He has a strong story, which I think is resonating well and truly, in today's world. And I think, you know, his passion for skincare, he's got beautiful skin and, you know, he really takes you back to take a deep breath and saying, you know what, you know, life's not that bad. You know, this is a pretty, what he's doing is pretty incredible. And, you know, I think, I'm very excited about David. I think he's, you know, he's bootstrapped his business and like no other. And, you know, I wish him incredible success. And I think he's going to do incredibly well.
Tell me a little bit about Joanna Vargas, because I know that that is a little bit of a different kind of investment strategy and also a different kind of brand that we're talking about in terms of like being fresh off the block, very new, and what she's doing, because that's, you know, the biggest piece of news probably more recently, correct?
Yeah, that is. Yeah, we've just made an investment in Joanna Vargas. And Joanna Vargas is a, you know, she's an incredible founder herself. Joanna Vargas, when I first met with her, you know, she truly is an authority in skincare. And, you know, she's a New York facialist to the stars. And, you know, I went to her salon and met with her like I do with any of the founders that I meet. And the way that she talks about her treatments and her products and how, she, you know, her life and how she's really built a brand around herself. And coming from Skin Laundry, I know how hard it is to build a products business when you're just focusing on services. And I really felt that, you know, we could be that missing piece for Joanna to really build a brand around her. Because I think that you can't do two at the same time. You know, to build, if you really want to focus on your services and your clients, that's will take up 95% of your time. And to build a products business around that, you don't have the time in the day. But I really believe that the products that, you know, we're helping with Joanna Vargas and helping her build her brand with the backing of Maureen is going to be something that will be very exciting for us. So that's just very new and really happy to announce it today. So I'm excited that about this partnership with her.
So is it really about with Joanna specifically, because, you know, is it really about the products business versus the service business and expanding her reach, whether it be on Amazon or Tmall or whatever, really bringing her aesthetic to the masses?
Yeah. So, you know, we have a lot of information and data about what the markets are looking for from these types of brands. And, you know, we thought that, you know, specifically in China, you know, we know what the customers are looking for and at what price point and what kind of products. And we think Joanna Vargas is a great vessel for this, for us to help build that category out and have a lot more influence around that. So, you know, helping her, you know, with new product development and, you know, manufacturing and also, you know, with the removal of animal testing, we think that, you know, we're going to be able to add a lot of value to a brand like hers. So, you know, it's a very small brand currently, but, you know, we think over the long term, we'll be able to, you know, really create some great value for her.
And Julian, I guess I would ask you, you know, when you think about the global beauty houses that exist out there, you know, so many of them are also trying to acquire right now for newness or for revenue goals. And I'm wondering like what your kind of proposition or point of view is versus say, you know, a Unilever who just bought Paula's Choice or an LVMH, which just really deals with heritage luxury, like a Guerlain. Tell me about that.
So I'm taking the beauty market from, you know, we're doing the reverse, I would say. I think, you know, traditionally the business model for a beauty company would be to, you know, build a beauty brand, you know, start discussing relationships online with, you know, building your D2C and then going to Mecca in Australia, Sephora in the US or Ulta, and in Asia, Southeast Asia. And we're looking at it from a different point of view. We think that we're trying to understand where the customer is going to live and build the beauty business and reverse engineer it from that way. So let's say, for example, that, you know, the Indian consumer is buying it on a certain channel. We would, you know, make sure that Super Ordinary is working on that channel. or if it's, you know, the consumer in Vietnam is buying it in this channel, we want to make sure that we're operating in that channel, making sure that our beauty brands are being fed through those channels. So, Super Ordinary is really about making these inaccessible markets accessible for our beauty brands. So making it, and that's why we call it Ordinary or even Super Ordinary. That's really how we thought about it. And I think once we can really develop strong expertise in being able to do that, then we can make some of these investments and buy brands and build a deep bench in the beauty aisle by owning some of these brands. But really was first to focus on distribution, because I believe we're moving into a world at extreme pace where, you know, borders are being opened or closed off. And, to understand the logistics and how to move products from one place to the next is very important. And COVID just accelerated that for everyone. So, you know, it makes a company like Super Ordinary quite relevant for brands who really do not have the expertise in, you know, in hundreds of countries around the world.
I would say, you know, for you, what is kind of the play when you think about how luxury is almost like consolidating in a way? I mean, even people would say that like luxury on Amazon isn't real luxury, or Sephora is going into Kohl's, or Target and Ulta are partnering up. There seems to be this really like convergence of channels and propositions all in together. So for you, you know, how are you kind of like distinguishing what you're doing in each of these markets, but also being cognizant of what's happening in the greater beauty landscape?
Yeah. You know, it's really interesting where you see shop and shops, you know, start to go into these different areas, and they come and go, they open up and then they close down. And, you know, I probably have a little bit more of a skeptical view on that, just purely because I think it's a zero sum game almost, because you're cannibalizing your own market in many cases, because that same consumers are shopping in, you know, these different shops, but it's not increasing overall revenue as you would expect it to. So I think that it's, you know, especially when what happened to retail in the last 2 years, you know, people have really tried to, and you know, landlords have been trying to figure out like what is the perfect mix. But, you know, companies like Sephora and Ulta are obviously trying to drive so much more online sales and increasing that. And using their storefronts to attract new customers so that they can purchase more and more products online. You know, where we think about Super Ordinary is that we want to be in all these markets which really are untapped right now for the beauty customer. So, you know, China being the main one, but, you know, we're looking at markets like Southeast Asia, you know, Australia. These are markets that we still think have a lot more upside in them. So rather than trying to, you know, stick within one market, we're trying to find more markets to enter into. That's really how we think, you know, growth is going to come to us.
So on that note, Julian, I don't know how much you can tell me, but are you going into new markets next year, whether it be India, Nykaa, or, you know, Australia?
You know, you, Priya, you would definitely be the first to know. All I can say is we do have plans. You know, anyone that knows me knows I can't sit still. we are, you know, we're really excited about, you know, where the world's going for us in terms of opening up new opportunities in these markets. And we have the trust of our brands, and we really think that we can do a great job in bringing them to market. So, you know, I lived in Southeast Asia pretty much most of my life, and I that market compared to the US and China, you know, if you look at the data that says it's only 20 billion in beauty in revenue for, as a beauty market, you know, China in the next 2 years will be 100 billion, but there's no reason why Southeast Asia can't be, you know, 40, 50, $60 billion. Anyone that's been there knows that that consumer is highly engaged socially and, again, you know, willing to try new products. So I think markets like Southeast Asia, India, I think, you know, there's a lot to be done there. And those consumers are spending so much more money now on hair care and personal care, not just skincare and color. And I think that's so exciting.
Julian, it was so great having you today. Thank you so much for doing this.
Thank you so much. Thanks for having me, Priya.
Thanks for tuning into the Glossy Beauty Podcast. Our theme music is by Otis McDonald. Please don't forget to rate and review us on iTunes or wherever you're listening. See you next week.